Welcome to the StarNet Regions 1 and 3 podcast. StarNet provides a variety of opportunities for personal and professional growth for those who touch the lives of young children, ages birth through 8, with an emphasis on children with special needs. StarNet supports family-centered research and effective practices in early childhood education and care. To find out more about StarNet, please visit starnet.org. I'm Bridget Meese, an early childhood resource specialist with StarNet Regions 1 and 3. I'm here today with Beth Ladd, the principal from the Urbana Early Childhood School, to talk about play. Beth, go ahead and tell us a bit about yourself.
Sure. Thanks, Bridget. Well, first and foremost, I started in education many years ago as a special ed teacher. And so I did several years as a special ed teacher and then teacher who supported students in alternative placements. And then I became a special ed administrator for several years. And I've worked at all levels. Now that I've been at early childhood, I've done early childhood through young adult. Prior to being principal at Urbana Early Childhood, I was principal at an elementary school for 3 years. So those are my two building administrative experiences.
So you've had a lot of experience then supporting teachers around not even just early childhood and preschool, but all the way through elementary and then into the upper years. What experiences do you have with play and supporting teachers in implementing play in the classrooms?
Yeah, when I got this question, it was the first thing that came to my mind was my experiences at Garden Hills Elementary School most recently and recess. And what an important part of the day that is for our students, but at times what a targeted part of the day where we see more struggles, and how connected what's happening on that playground is to what's kind of changed in our world around us in terms of how kids interact and play with each other. And so, you know, growing up, for me, spent a lot of time outside, a lot of time with other kids, unsupervised adults, but certainly engaged in play activities that were really what led to foundational, just having a foundation of how to interact and get along with people. And I think now, as our kids are coming to us, and our world has changed and our kids are engaging in what we ask them to do, which is be occupied on devices or, right now, not be around as many people as you used to. I really found that recess at Garden Hills required a lot of intentionality for us in terms of what we wanted our kids to do, how we taught that to them, how we reinforced it, and how we increase their ability to play with each other in an unstructured setting at school. And so that's really what popped into my mind when you asked, you know, shared that question with me ahead of time, and how really reliant on support staff in the elementary level of social workers and support staff to monitor and be with those kids on that playground, learning how to play again. In a way that our kids just aren't coming to us having experienced a lot before. And then obviously, you know, I started at Urbana Early Childhood during this pandemic. And so I started our students being here, engaging in instruction remotely. So it wasn't about a lot of play. And then as we opened our classrooms, we had to redefine what we meant by play. We had, you know, really strict initial COVID protocols around not sharing materials, not touching your friends in the same way that we have, and not engaging with each other within 6 feet. And so we really struggled with understanding that all that we do here is based on helping our kids play and create those foundational skills. And we had to do that in a different way. And so my lack of understanding about really specifics having to do with developmental play wasn't an issue. And now as we've opened our classrooms and have more kids and know more about COVID and know that our kids can play safely and share safely and engage safely, we've just really seen a need to reset all of our thinking and remind ourselves what it means to play in our program and how that is what our students are learning.
So that's quite a lot going on, especially going from the elementary school where it was intentional play, but like you mentioned, screens have definitely been an impact. And that was even before COVID hit.
Oh, absolutely.
And now at the preschool level, you have children coming in who the last year, they had to stay away from each other. Mm-hmm. So when they were there for that first year of preschool, they didn't have the typical experiences of how do I ask a friend to play? How do I ask a friend to share? So what have been some of the challenges and successes working with your staff on reteaching those skills now that we've learned more about what children can do safely?
Yeah, I think I'll start with one of the successes. And I will say our kids are coming to school wanting to be with their friends. And, you know, obviously I can't compare to pre-COVID what our students at Urbana Early Childhood were like, but I can tell you I've heard from so many staff members how so many of our classrooms are coming in. The kids are greeting their students. It's student-to-student conversation. It's student-to-student excitement. They are asking where their friends are when they aren't here. There just really is this connection you're seeing that I think is directly related to some of these kids and families' experiences having not had that for the last year and a half in that same way. And so our kids are showing us they're ready. They know that that's what they need and they're doing that. And so that is absolutely one of the successes. I think for our teachers, one of the most difficult things is balancing safety and what they know to be best practice. And I think I have 12 teachers, 12 classroom teachers, and, you know, 40 other support staff. And so that's 62 personal comfort levels with everything that's going on. And so that is really tricky to have a classroom who's very comfortable with just running things like they used to and using some basic protocols to keep their kids safe, and some other spaces where we're not quite ready for that. And we're still a little more hesitant. And so I think that has been a struggle for teachers to accept being okay with where they are and where their colleagues are and that it looks a little different. I think the other thing that has been tricky is so much time and intensity and energy needing to go in to all of these other things that are related to COVID and protection and managing myself, that I kind of have not exercised my brain as much as I typically do in thinking about play for kids. And so really trying to balance, prioritizing that, remembering what we used to do, why we used to do it, bringing that back just is kind of pushing people a little differently than it used to. I did have another thing I wanted to mention from your first question, Bridget. So I'm going to go back. And I think one of the things you sent ahead or asked me was just something that really stands out to you in terms of play. And one of the experiences I had here at Early Childhood last spring was a parent event that was hosted by another group. And the speaker was unable to come. So one of my teachers stepped in and really described for the families who were there what we mean when we say play is how we learn. And she did such an amazing job of describing her role as the teacher, her TA's role, the family's role, and the student's role, that it was really kind of the first time I'd thought about it in that way so explicitly, and realized, one, how talented many of my staff are in terms of this, but two, how much I personally need to increase my knowledge around that. I'm a educator across pre-K through 12, young adult, which means I haven't spent as much time at early childhood as the staff in my building who are experts in that area. My background is special ed, and I didn't have children of my own. So I haven't thought about it the same way those who are planning play experiences do here. And so when she explained it so creatively and so completely for these families, it really was a reminder to me of how much I need to use my teachers as experts to grow my own knowledge base.
Thank you for going back and sharing that. So now I'm going to go off of questions that we haven't even talked mm-hmm. about.
Yes.
What is it that you want to learn about play so that you can support teachers in implementing what we know is the developmentally appropriate practices and what's best for children?
Yeah, I think there are two things that are really important for me personally right now is just kind of a foundational, better understanding of the stages of play. And, you know, I've been around children my whole adult career and spent a lot of time around young children as a young adult, but never really thought about it in terms of kind of stages and what comes first and what comes next and that layering of instruction. And so for me, that's one thing I'm trying to learn more about. I think the other important piece of that is how do my staff insert themselves into that play in a meaningful way without taking away from the student's choice and voice. And obviously I have thoughts and ideas about that related to other forms of social interactions and learning, but really relating that, articulating that around our kids at this level and their play is something that I just need to do for myself to be a better leader.
And what is it that you wish you knew about play when you started with, even at the elementary level, because we know that it's completely different at middle school and high school. So what is it, especially with the early childhood age group, what did you want to know about play before you started?
Yeah. I wish that I knew more about how to help parents connect that what they see us doing is learning. I wish that that was kind of more of a primary focus for me, especially since parents were the teachers last year, that we maybe could have done, and I could have done a better, you know, kind of foundational piece of, and we did that some, right? I mean, the things we were sending home for our kids to do, the things we were saying to families, but I just don't think, I think maybe I was paying more lip service to it than really understanding and helping families understand that a little bit more. I think, and probably some of your later questions will address this too, this issue for kindergarten readiness and what that means is, I think, coming from an elementary space and seeing a disconnect between what's happening in kindergarten classrooms and what kindergartners need, and then coming here and seeing what they need happening, there's this real disconnect between what kindergarten readiness means and how people view that. And I think that's a huge component of, I wish I knew kind of a different way to approach that.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on that disconnect that you're seeing?
Yeah, so I think there continues to be just this strong academic push. Our kids have to be reading when they come into kindergarten. What kinds of academic skills related to letters, numbers, written work are our kids coming to us with in kindergarten, because there's such this push for our kindergarten teachers to have them at a very specific spot when they exit kindergarten. And I mean, this has been a conversation that started with No Child Left Behind, right? I mean, all of this kind of feeds off of that and probably was happening before that as well. But the disconnect I see is that play gets us there. Play gets us where we want to be academically, but there's a concern among educators that not everybody recognizes that, or they disagree with that. And so they're pushing for some of these different focuses around that, when really we want that, we can get there. We can just do it through play and learning through play and doing those academic skills incorporated into that in a different way. And so that disconnect between what we're asking our preschoolers to do and then 3 months later, or 2.5 months later, what we're asking our kindergartners to do, which is an adult problem, is the disconnect for me.
Well, and now you've had the opportunity to see those kindergartners when they're coming mm-hmm. in, but then you've also now seen the 3 and 4 year olds mm-hmm. coming into the preschool, and you have that nice perspective of, okay, these 3 year olds, this is where they're starting. And if you start where they are with that play focus and what's developmentally what they're ready for, which is that play, self-directed, and maybe even mm-hmm. some of the guided play mm-hmm. to get them ready, because we know that they mature greatly over that summer months in order to be ready for that kindergarten. But exactly. there should be a transition there so that the children have that opportunity to play a little bit in kindergarten and build up to those expectations. But you're yeah. right. We hear a lot about those expectations where they need to know these letters. They need to know these numbers. They need to start reading. But developmentally, that's not where 3 and 4 year olds are.
Right. Or 5 year olds at a certain point. And I think another disconnect is this idea that kindergarten looks like kindergarten the same from August through, you know, June or May, if you're lucky enough to get out in May still. Right. But, you can start kindergarten with a more play-based focus and transition throughout that year. But there just isn't that understanding or push. And teachers are getting mixed messages. You know, you think about just as I just said that, we're doing the kids assessment, right? And that is a message that says you're doing this during their, and you know, naturally what's happening. It's not pull out. It's not a test outside of that. It's with incorporated very much like our authentic assessments and documentation at preschool level. So that message is coming, and that's being said, but it's also do this particular assessment to get that information. Do this particular, make sure you've got your reading, there's just mixed messaging there that certainly is frustrating to teachers and not clear enough to fully support where our kids are developmentally.
Well, that authentic assessment while children are playing really gives you that better picture of what children can do on their mm-hmm. own, or even through their experiences with peers or play with adults. It really does change when you pull them to do that assessment piece separately. And you're right, there's the mixed messages, not only in the kindergarten level, but also at that preschool level, because the preschool teachers feel that pressure to do some of those same things, even though they know that if you look at the developmental process and what works best for children, you're right, there's that really strong disconnect.
You know, I think over the last few years, we've certainly here, and I'm sure in lots of other places, been able to do some stronger transition focus from pre-K to K. And so, you know, what pre-K teachers are hearing from kindergarten teachers is these kids aren't ready for kindergarten. And so they feel an obligation to their colleagues to do what they feel like their colleagues want us to do to get their kids ready for kindergarten. And what kindergarten teachers are hearing is, you know, these are where our kids are, and now you need to recognize where they are and do the same practice we're doing. And there's just so many other factors at play. The other thing with authentic assessment is at times it could be perceived that that takes longer and requires some different skills and some different time than just being able to one-on-one sit here and say, tell me your ABCs. Like that's a pretty easy process to move through with your kids one at a time, same process, same steps, and you can run through it. Whereas, you know, really trying to get into their play, there is some time management and some, what are my other kids doing during this time? And a lot of our preschoolers do have more adult hands in them than our kindergarten classrooms, which which doesn't support kind of some of those things we're thinking about developmentally.
So how do you support your staff right now with doing that authentic assessment through play?
Yeah, so we were not headed in that direction this year. We had some other goals on our plate. I think we all, when we came back to school this fall, thought it's going to be a better year than last year, and we're going to get some things back to normal and regular, whatever normal and regular means anymore. And we certainly didn't feel that or see that. And so we were recognizing, one, we have a lot of newer staff. Two, we have a lot of staff who have been through some different things, and maybe we weren't seeing exactly what we wanted in all 12 of our classrooms in terms of play and how adults support that play in their planning and in their actions. So we did a mid-year pivot to kind of giving our teachers some choice and voice, like we want our students to get in terms of what we do next. So we have divided up some opportunities for some self-directed professional development over the next few weeks during our staff meeting time, instead of it being whole group. And so we narrowed down some how teachers might engage in a refresher or learning around play. So things like, how might you do it? You might do it through a webinar that you watch with your colleagues. You might do it through a book study. You might do some article reviews. You might do kind of a review, look through of our curriculum, creative curriculum, through the lens of play. And so those were the hows that we have offered to staff as an opportunity. And then the what really revolves around play and culture, adult responsibilities, whether I'm a teacher, a TA, or a speech pathologist in play. Another sensory play is another what that our group kind of really wanted to explore. And then the developmental, just a better understanding of the developmental stages of play. So we offered them the how, we gave them choices of the what. They are making their choices right now. We are going to group them based on their preference, and then have a teacher leader facilitator for each group. And kind of our next step is to walk through a reflection or end product that we want, product not being the correct word, but you get the idea, something that we want an outcome for in terms of this. And we anticipate that this will take, you know, the staff meeting time for probably February and March. And then really are hoping our teachers will come back from that and share with each other and teach each other some of the things they've learned through this process. So those are our next steps in helping our staff, not just teachers. We say teachers, when I say teachers, I'm really meaning teachers, social workers, TAs, all of our staff be better equipped. Whether they're a veteran teacher who has a lot, we know they'll get something out of this, or whether they're one of our newer teachers, especially since they've got some choice in what they want to do.
So it sounds like you've got a lot in place already for them to support your staff with what they need to know more about play, but they've got that choice. They've got that opportunity to see, okay, here's what I really want to know more of. It really sounds like it reflects a project-based learning process, because you've done the investigation, and then this is the part where they really dive in, get their questions answered, and then they get to celebrate it and share what they learned with everyone else. So that's nice that it mirrors what you typically do in the classroom, but at the adult level.
Absolutely. And I forgot, one of the first things we did was really just put out probably 7 to 10 articles that we had seen and found and knew were strong articles around play, and really ask teachers, what stuck out to you, and what about this supports your own beliefs around how our students learn? So we really went back to some of that initial, not an in-depth look at our beliefs around play. We felt our staff weren't quite in the best frame of mind to dig too deeply into that right now with all of the other pressures and expectations. But we did just want to have a brief reminder and kind of put out there and see if we have some differing beliefs around how students best learn. And so we did some sharing out and posting of those. And so that really helped us initially decide what our next step was going to be.
Well, thank you for sharing all of your perspectives and what you're doing in your program. Is there anything else that you want to share that we haven't talked about yet?
You know, when I saw that question in writing, I didn't have an answer. And the moment you asked it, I don't know why I feel obligated to say this right now. Who knows who's going to listen to this podcast, right? But I guess you're seeing a lot out there on social media about how hard our educators are working. And I think this is just a time and a place where, because of everything that was happening in education long before COVID, and now certainly because of COVID, our educational systems need the support of everybody out there, including our families and our students, and just being aware of how hard our students are working to be successful at school, how hard our families are working to get our students into school and keep them there, and how hard our teachers are working to make sure our students are ready for what comes next is just something that I think in education we really need people to understand right now and be more aware of now than ever. All fields are feeling this way, but I think when we think about the fact that we are taking in little hearts and minds every day who are ready to be a part of our school society, and how much more difficult that's come to be able to manage ourselves as educators and our students with what they bring, is just something we all need to be mindful and aware of right now.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you for your time and being willing to share your experiences with us.
Thanks, Bridget.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the StarNet Regions 1 and 3 podcast. If you have any questions or concerns, please reach out to starnet@wau.edu or submit a request using the Make a Request button on our homepage.